Well, let's note that it is 1:20 already. 1:20, and we'll start the meeting. Start with public comment. Do you have anything you want to say? Okay. I'll welcome you.
Thank you for coming.
Okay. So, roll call. Adam?
Here.
What else we got going on here? John? Candace? Yeah. Kelly? We have a quorum. So we'll approve the minutes of the meeting of, get in front of me so I don't make a mistake, February 13th. Any questions? Comments or corrections?
It shows that Jeff Myers is not present, but he was.
He was present?
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, what were you doing?
Sitting here.
Invisible? Okay, well, we'll note that change. All approved?
Aye.
Okay, aye. So let's call it approved. And do I need to sign this, or do you have a... Thank you.
I think we can just have Adam update them and send out an approved copy.
Okay.
And there we go.
Okay. And then, of course, the workshop is on the 27th. Do we need to approve those minutes, or are those just...
We didn't really need minutes, but there was an action, so we just recorded.
Okay, there was.
Recorded the action, and that
okay.
was it. Yeah, so...
Well, we better approve those
probably,
too.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, any changes for the meeting, the workshop meeting of February 27th? Hearing none, we'll do we all approve these minutes? Okay. Approved. We will pass those on for final two. And then we. For the agenda, we wanted to hear from both Greg and Adam. And since Adam's here, why don't we just move right into Adam's presentation. Are you ready, Adam?
Yeah.
Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
The question was asked, you know, where do you live? You know, what do you want to see happen within Clark County regarding the park system? And, you know, what's going on around your neighborhood? And so I've been thinking about it for quite some time, and so I wanted to propose something to you just as an idea. And so part of that is the raised walkway trail, something that it doesn't exist, and it just kind of casts something potentially for the future. So my bio, I worked with the nonprofit industry about 9 years. I partnered with many NGOs. I worked in about 30 countries, Afghanistan, Sudan, China, Russia, mostly third world. Supervised, facilitated over 70 project teams doing community development stuff. distributed tens of thousands of pounds of medical supplies, water, clothes, blankets. Recently, got my bachelor's degree at Washington State University, and I teach, lead and teach a small group of young professionals every week for about 3 to 4 hours a week, and of course, PowerPoint. So, big picture, here we are, Clark County, and the dot is where I live. Just zooming in, so you've got Battleground and I-5, and continue to zoom in. I live on a dead end road here, and every day I go for walks, and I actually walk down this. This is 1 mile, or sorry, this is a half mile exactly. And so I walk back and forth, pick my dog, and my nieces and nephews come over, and we bring out our tractors and we drive up the street and back down. It's a great little area. So this is literally where I've grown up. So born in 79, and so this has been my home really since then. I spent some time in Colorado Springs, but outside of traveling, this is where I call home. And so what I want to do is talk about this bit right here. This was an old farmer's field that used to bale hay, and I used to help buck hay when I was a kid, and it's just been it's a gorgeous chunk of property. And currently the Washington Department of Transportation purchased this land as a wetland, I guess. So they're rebuilding, as you guys know, the 219 is turned into a highway, right, going right into Battleground. So it's really unusual to see this new stretch of, you know, pavement going in, and just it's just different. And so as you can imagine, since a new highway is going in, all this is just going to be developed up and down this all the way into Battleground, eventually. And so what I'm proposing is as a raised walkway trail in this general area. I want to show you a little bit of what I'm referring to. So I took video. As you can see, there's a just kind of slopes and goes off into the water there. This is my nephews, and they're riding. They don't know how to ride bicycles, but they could drive a tractor. So, and then this bit back here, they're actually developing into apartment buildings or something back here.
Is that the road you walk down?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So my dog's in the park. So it's my dad, my cousin, my aunt, my brother, and his kids. But this is just a gorgeous, a stunning area. You've got Highway 502 back here. So I'm thinking just like a raised, some kind of raised trail or something that can go in here. I don't know. And again, it's WashDOTs, so it's not Clark County. But every time I walk past them, like, it's a gorgeous chunk of land that I wish the community could participate in. So what I'm referring to is something like this. We all, you know, we're familiar with it, but, you know, something where everyone could enjoy or walk around. And
where is this raised walk that you're taking?
These are pictures from like the Boy Scouts have actually built and different things. So these are just different locations.
Not here in the county?
I'm not sure. In the state of Washington.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, but this is kind of what I was referring to. It's something that I think would be that'd be wonderful. So here's as well another video. As we can see, there's Highway 502. And this is 68.6 acres.
68.6?
Yeah, 68.6. And so we've got, again, Highway 502 and
are you allowed to build walkways through wetlands?
I think so, because you're not disturbing the ground, but the My hope is to, there's my dog. My hope is to, so working overseas, you can't just go in by yourself. To you, for the most part, anyone who's successful at working overseas works in partnerships with other organizations, because we can't all do it by ourselves. And so what I'm proposing is some kind of partnership. And whether or not, you know, even if this doesn't work, but I love the idea of working with other organizations, other agencies to partner together. So again, the benefits of Raised Walkway, low impact design for environmentally sensitive areas, minimizes potential impacts for recreational use, prevents erosion, provides stable surface, protects existing vegetation, lightweight, and there's tons of other benefits. So the proposal is just an idea to throw out. It's the formation of a long-term partnership between unincorporated Clark County Parks and Trails and Washington and WashDOT in order to maximize land usage for recreational purposes. I don't know the realities of what I'm proposing.
So Adam, on that big piece of property, have you seen the landscape plan or the restoration plan for that wetland? I mean, I'm sure they're going to be putting some wood debris out there and doing some probably more, you know, wetland planting and stuff. Have you seen any of that to know what they have in store?
Honestly, I haven't.
Okay, maybe we can ask a question of them and see what they have in place, and then open up that dialogue.
That'd be fantastic. I think it'd be awesome just to even, since they own the land, if there's a way to maximize the usage, right?
Sure.
And development, environmentally low impact, Raised Nature Walkway, so da da da. So here's the benefits of Clark County. It's highly visible along Highway 502, which I think would draw people, right? People are like, oh man, that'd be great to walk out there, you know, and check out the salamanders and hawks and wild plants and turtles and stuff that are all crawling around it. As well as the future development along Highway 502 is, you can imagine, there's probably going to be some nice malls and stuff in that area. So it'd be cool to leverage our relationships to create something for the future. As well as increase, I think, revenue would grow. No land purchase necessary. Again, this is just, it'd be an amazing thing. The interagency partnership, I think, we can't do it alone, and so it's great to be able to use to maximize our relationships, right? Not just one agency working. And you know, there's, as I was, you know, where my nieces were driving the tractor around, it'd be cool to, you know, there's room for ADA, the buses turn around, and you could really, it's just a huge area for, you know, school field trips and stuff, and tons of other benefits, but just want to throw that out at you, and you know, this is my neighborhood. I'd love to see it develop. So, thanks, guys.
You guys ever been to Beards Hollow down in between the Seaview and Iwako? There's a boardwalk there, and it looks similar to that. But they have some interpretive signs, you know, that overlooks the wetland. Mm-hmm. So you walk along, and all of a sudden you come across all this information that just tells you what about, you know, what the land is about, what its purpose is, and the habitat, and all the flora and fauna, and all that stuff. It's really cool, really neat.
I was on an Iwako yesterday at a big boardwalk. I'm not sure if that's the same one.
Yeah,
it was beautiful.
All the way to Long Beach.
Yeah, I was on that yesterday.
Yeah,
that's nice. Wow,
it was pretty impressive.
It is.
A lot of wood.
How long?
To answer your question, wetlands have some restrictions, but typically raised beds, raised walkways, are acceptable in wetlands. We do have one, and I'm over on a little neighborhood park.
Yeah, Jorgensen.
Jorgensen Park, yep. Right. Mm-hmm. We built a raised bed in there, and that was a wetland there.
Yep.
I haven't been back since we built it, but when I was working with Kauf,
They use like a pin system to anchor the poles.
Right.
You know, so it's really low impact to the wetland itself.
So what is it? Can you recall the address of that?
It's off of Anderson Avenue, just south of 78th Street. So I would say it's like 75th off Anderson Ave or Northwest 3rd, which is the east side of the park. There's two ways into it. So there's an east side and a west side approach.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, take a look.
It's a relatively short one, but it's at least it's an example of what we do have.
Very effective and
already.
It's really nice. It's a boardwalk, and I believe it's a pin system that holds it in place, which is designed for wetland purposes. So you're not actually drilling holes into the ground so much.
Cool.
And that's pretty acceptable. It's very low impact, so I think permitting would be less than the impacts. So.
Bill or Kelly, how do boardwalks compare to asphalt as far as cost to put it?
Oh, it's tenfold as expensive. It's very expensive, but you wouldn't be able to put an asphalt trail in the weather.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And in the case of this, it would probably be a combination of hard surface and boardwalks, depending on the flow of water on the ground and the wetland. That would have probably studied out. But I think it's a phenomenal project in the sense that it would be a partnership with the state if it were to work forward. And I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, 68 acres of public open space on a major road in a growth area is pretty impressive to even be talking about. So I commend you on even bringing the idea to the table.
And Adam, do you know, are they flooding that field from runoff, or has it always been a wetland and the farmer worked around it?
So what had happened is they had, it was a farmer's field, and then when they started to do the Highway 502, before they started taking putting the new bridge, if you will, before they put the pilings in the ground, they took an entire foot of dirt all the way off that entire area.
Mm-hmm.
And then they piled it up, and I was actually standing on
that pile.
It wasn't that pile, but they put a new pile there from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But same thing. But that it does.
So they created a bowl, in other words.
It's a low spot, but it's not incredibly deep. It's shallow. You know, there's a lot of waterfowl and stuff kind of flying in through there. A lot of birds, hawks, and stuff flying around. But you've got Mill Creek that kind of feeds it, and then it flows out. It's a stunning piece of property.
For the permitting process of the new 219, I'm sure for every square foot of wetland that they have to take away from the system, they have to replace it. Is it 2-to-1 or 4-to-1?
It depends on the quality.
It depends on the quality, but that's what this is all about. That's why the state has bought this property. And so it is potentially, not knowing the property and not knowing the project, potentially it's a great partnership.
It looks to me, the status that it's in, that they haven't done anything to it. Plus, I've scraped it and, you know, just maybe seeded it and just let it go from there. But I would imagine they're going to have something to enhance that wetland, you know, to make it more of a high quality. And so I'll try to get a hold of DOT and see what kind of plans they might have and see if we can get our hands on it. So I get an idea. And they may have some ideas to store it as well to make them more interactive with the public. But I know along that whole stretch it's probably going to be commercial on both sides of the road. That's what they're building for.
Right.
It's going to be with four lanes all the way there.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's we'll see if we can get some homework done and come back with some information for you.
That'd be awesome.
Sure.
Just to add real quick, WashDOT does have grant funding for trails. I think it's called Alternative Transportation.
Yes,
funds.
They do.
So I'd be willing to call my contact about grant funding for maybe next year.
We actually talked about that here a couple weeks ago with our folks from what's that group that's there on the fourth floor of Fisher? Is that transportation?
Oh, yeah, RTC, Regional Transportation Council.
And we're taking a look at the possibility of extending the Shalachi Trail into Battleground. Scott Sawyer, he's very interested in connecting that piece where we left off.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great.
It sounds like the grant funding is kind of spoken for this particular grant cycle. That there's a possibility for the next grant cycle that they would take a hard look at that. But with Bogart, all of it, obviously there's other projects out there. You know, but definitely. That's a great funding source.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's $1.5 million, I think, is the amount that they have available.
Right.
So, yes.
Thank you, guys.
Good job, Adam. I appreciate it. You got any thoughts in the bigger picture of what's available to you out there? Have you been to what would be Battleground Lake State Park?
Yeah. I mean, I've spent time in Battleground, Louisville, all those, but the nearest park, I think, to me is Daybreak.
Daybreak,
which
uh-huh.
is
which is
2.5 miles away.
It's right. 2.5 miles away?
Yes.
If we do have,
we have a
talk
master
about
plan
that
drawing in the packet today of that one.
All right.
Can you share with us any of your experience of that park in recent years?
Daybreak?
Yeah.
I learned how to swim there.
There you go.
I know that water well.
Is that a spare packet?
Yes.
Sure packet, it isn't a spare packet.
Late and unprepared, that's why I'm a high quality.
Well, I do appreciate you taking the time to think through that and to share with us kind of your focus on life in Clark County. So it's always a pleasure. And I think it was a great idea that we do this. We did plan to have Greg today as well. I haven't heard from him yet. So I guess we'll just move on to the next part of our meeting, which is unfinished business by you, Bill. So,
okay.
You want to take it on?
I think the idea here is to just kind of talk about the comments that we've gotten from our three open houses. And by the way, thank you so much for your participation. I don't know, John,
before that, I think you were going to talk a little bit about the doors.
Turn on the lights.
Got someone first request to turn the lights on. Turn on the lights. Well, since that request, obviously we've had a lot of emails going back and forth. Jeff has been very active in trying to make sure that our parks page contains everything that we've done to date with this Parks Advisory Board as far as the comp plan is concerned. So goals, objectives, all that stuff is on there. The service levels are on there. Basically, both of Gene's presentations have been put onto our what we call the grid. Also, along with, I believe we've got our PIF balances on there, and the PIF map is on there. So, essentially, everything that we've done today with the comp plan, all the components are on the grid for the public to view, as well as the counselors themselves.
One quick point of clarification, the PIF districts and the PIF fund balances is on the Parks homepage, not the PAP page. I can put it there if people would like that.
We can actually, I think as long as it's on the Parks page, I think we're okay there.
Yeah, I think we should get them used to looking at the Parks page anyway. So.
Right. As well as, we had the open houses posted on there, along with the video link, the CDTV link that was there, that was advertising, to the folks that, would be great to come to the open houses, and then also, more importantly, to take the survey. And so that's still posted up there as far as the survey. And so I think we're gonna hold the survey open probably through the period that we get all of our stakeholder meetings out of the way.
Okay, I think that makes sense.
So try to maximize or get as many folks taking that survey as possible. So that's the kind of the idea here. We're nowhere near 7,000 yet. That was my anticipated goal.
Okay.
Who came up with that number?
I don't know. Me.
Well, it's a good sounding number.
Oh, yeah. Trying to be optimistic. I think, it was trying to exceed the 1,800, sure. I believe, that we had in the 2007.
So is there any major particular point of the change in the scope that Commissioner Medora wanted changed from what we were originally doing, or did it just want to know?
I can tell you that obviously, getting these two contracts approved was a very difficult task.
Right.
They got pulled from consent and discussions. Of course, Councilor Medora came to one of our
right.
advisory board here. Meetings, gave us the spiel on turning on the lights, and so all the action items that he had asked us to do, primarily did pretty immediately,
right.
And then got back to him with all the remaining questions that he had. We were concerned that maybe he wasn't reading all the information that we had presented and or gave to him, or maybe he didn't go on the web page and take a hard look around. But at the last consent that just occurred, it was last Tuesday night. It was a nighttime meeting. It was a long meeting. Of course, we were at the open house, so we weren't there, but
right.
Keith was. And as well as Barbara and Marcia, who also testified, and they passed it. Councilor Madora was ready to pull it off one more time, but I think there was enough pressure from the other two councilors, plus with Barbara's and Marcia's testimony, that they decided to go through with it. That said, they do have, Councilor Madora said that he wanted to possibly change some of the scope of the contracts. I don't know. I think it was particularly with the conservation techniques contract. I took a hard look at the scope of the work that was proposed, and the only thing I could really see that he may have had some question with was the park impact fee piece of it. And so today we have not heard a word. And so I've been asking Heath on a more regular basis, because Heath is kind of my liaison to him. And there's been no meetings set. There's been nothing talked about. So I don't know if he's going to let that go and just say go forth and do what you're doing, or if there's going to be some kind of, response back from them sometime in the future. But, he knows clearly that time is of the essence and that we need to move forward.
Okay.
And that, we're actually behind schedule as a result.
Right, definitely.
And so that's where we're at right now.
Okay.
And so I guess the short answer is, I don't know.
Jeff, you have anything to add to that?
Just a couple of things. First of all, those type of communications, as Bill mentioned, would be done with the Public Works Director and the Acting
Secretary. Sure, I understand
that. Second, it's possible as we work our way through the process, we're going to maybe tease that out a little bit where the scope could be tightened down some too, and we could possibly bring that forward as well.
Yeah, I think that Councilor Madora is very concerned that as a result of this comprehensive plan that we may try to increase taxes, or PIF fees, or I think another thing he was very concerned about is the PIF districts, the combining them possibly. I don't know what the concerns are yet. I guess we'll just have to have that discussion, quite honestly. We need to hear something back from him, what concerns him, so we can take action on it.
Did you get a feel from his being here? I mean, I heard everything from afar, but I was listening pretty closely, that he wanted to meet with Barbara and I more often, or was that...
Well, there's a couple of things. It's kind of contradictory to a point, and that is, with Barbara, from what she had told me, she asked Councilor Madora early on, when the Parks Advisory Board was first formed, she asked him, how often do you want us to stay in touch with you? And at the time, he said, annually is fine. But, his actions more lately are dictating that he wants to meet with you more often. I think it's probably because of the comp plan, and he just wants to make sure that he's heard from the Parks Advisory Board, that the Parks Advisory Board is basically leading this whole process, or helping to lead this process, and making the decisions, and that we're on track. And we're doing all the things, we're doing all the public outreach, and we're keeping everybody involved.
Yeah.
Particularly him.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear. The answer I wanted to hear. How about Gene? You guys are okay? You're feeling like your scope is doable?
Well, we can see an image of the contract, and I think it's signed, so I'm back.
You were back last time too. And
well, we never really fully left.
I know.
Treading water for a long time. Backpedal. So we are probably a month and a half late. Not late, but
behind.
Delayed, thank you. In terms of the assessments that we're doing, which still need to be done, were the trail assessment, the sport assessment, and then this whole PIF question, which is probably just as well we are slightly delayed on that. And let me just articulate a little bit of maybe why that's confusing. We don't know what the result will be. Now, let's go back in time to November, maybe December, when we did the level of service assessment and looked at, according to your current standards, this is how many acres you need, and here's the geographic distribution in the urban area of where all the parks are in the PIF districts, and here's how much more acreage you need. And then the question is, could that really fit? If you wanted to have geographic and geo-equity or equitable distribution of parks so that everybody has something they could walk to, would you change your standards now so that you still get that, but it might take a little longer because you've lowered your PIF fees, or do you keep everything the way it is, the standards and therefore the PIF fees, until you get to the point where you're almost built out in each district? Then you reevaluate and say, you know what, we've got enough, we really can't maintain more based on our income in the levy, and everybody's got something to walk to. And even though our adopted standard says we still need 13 more acres in PIF District 5, we don't think we do because we made really good quality choices and we have the distribution we want. Well, we haven't done that assessment to know. And so it's a little vague in the scope of the contract, because we're going to basically be testing out a build-out in the existing districts to see what's it going to take for them to be built out. How would they be affected if you dissolve some lines between districts? Would that get you there faster by combining two districts that have different distribution of funds but different levels of service? And would that help you meet your standard faster and get the equitable distribution? We don't know. So that's the assessment that we're looking at doing. And it may be a little vague because as I move forward in it, I'm not predicting what the end result will be before I've done the work. So.
Just to add about the PIF districts as well, I'm Lori Lebowski with Community Planning. I see some new faces. There's also the legal aspect that of how many PIF districts we can have or not have.
Well, because our PIF districts are changing based on the city county, will we be proposing any change of boundaries on those at all, or do you
there's the city county boundary. That's established. So 5 is already split in half in terms of who collects.
That's what I mean.
So the city collects part of 5 and the county collects part of 5. And the question came up earlier, even before the comp plan started, should these be simplified? You know, if we have these 5 and District 5 even is in 2 different pieces. It's not contiguous. So, you know, you've got a bunch, and it's always, there used to be 10 when it was a combined city-county managed thing. And you're always juggling different deadlines and meeting different needs, and so it takes a little bit of extra effort, but
So that's the question. This is 5. 5, part of it is in the city, part of it's in the county. Mm-hmm. So now we really have 2 separate
geographic things, but it's the same.
But you don't see a need for changing these boundaries now, as at this point.
That's the question.
That's the question.
Okay. It had been asked if could we change? Could you simplify those 6 into 3?
Yeah.
If you did, where would the 3 be? And how complicated would the accounting be from money collected up until the date you change them, which has to stay geographically where those districts are, to then being allocated? And would that just make it more complicated? And so that's. But the bigger question in my mind, even if all the districts stay exactly the way they are, everything stays the way it are, the question is, if we're doing a capital facilities plan that looks 6 years and then 20 years ahead, can you predict when you really don't want to have tiny little parks everywhere? Because that question was, well, it depends on your urban growth boundary too. That's another variable. But can you see that, you know, that happening? And would you, at some point, change what that standard is? And that's a whole other question. Because that's a question that is raised regularly. And this came up 5 years ago. We already have too many parks. We have enough. Well, how do you justify that? How do you measure that? We have enough. Well, that's great if you live near a park. If you don't, when is enough enough? So that's sort of it. Some of that would be to answer that question. I don't know if that makes it clear or fuzzy.
Gina, is it another option? I almost hesitate bringing it up because it sounds like a can of worms, but here we go. For example, District 6 has more money than District 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget how they each do. Could you simply, instead of combining, could you enlarge District 7 to take a portion of District 6 to capture some of that revenue into it? Redrawing lines.
You can redraw the lines, but anytime you redraw lines,
you still have to keep
wherever you still have to account for the old lines and the new lines.
Mm-hmm.
So now instead of until all the money from the old line is spent.
So you're at 10 years.
Yeah.
So there's a 10-year statute of limitation on that stuff. If you don't spend it, you have to give it back so you spend it. So for 10 years you'd have to account for both lines.
Until you spend out the old line.
Right. Is that something that you'll look at all, or is that just throwing another complexity into the thing?
Oh, well, moving line. Moving line would be the whole next question in terms of each one's current level of service. What does that mean relative to number of parks? So if you go back to when we did the level of service deed, it was based on standard, which was acreage per thousand. So you look at population, you look at acreage, not number of parks or geographic equity distribution. And that's the, we want to take it to the next point of saying, here's the number of parks in what that acreage represents, and here are the gaps. How many people can't walk to a park, or how much of an area can't walk to that park? And hypothetically, if you were to go and target acquisition and you added a 2.5 to 3.5 acre park here, here, and here, would that meet it? And then that was only 7.5 acres of parks, and you allow for everybody to be able to walk someplace. And you know, put that in the range of whether it's a neighborhood park or a community park, and what's the average acreage, and you know, to throw that into the mix of saying when would the build out, what would it take to get to build out, and compare that to what's your current level of service and your standard, and how would you adjust those? And it's really kind of trying to look in the future, not knowing or being able to accurately predict the economy and the rate of growth. Sort of, you can sort of predict it, because we've already looked at that. To have some sense of at what point would you either change the lines or say, you know what, these PIF districts, because they're landlocked by other PIF districts where the growth boundary will occur, we predict these will no longer need a park impact fee in 10 years or something. I have no idea. That's so.
I think, you know, honestly, the thought of getting rid of park impact fees is just, to me, is ludicrous, because now that we've got the acquisition and development combined, there's always room to improve parks that are already improved. You know?
Right.
So there's always a need.
We do need to come up with, you know, and I see this, my opinion. When I get the development information and I see the traffic impact fee, park impact fee, school impact fee, they break the park impact fee out and tell you how much of that's going to acquisition and how much is going to
development.
Uh-huh. The development fee is sadly, I'm going to throw a number out to give you a perspective. Let's say it's only 5% of the fee. The other 95% is going to acquisition. And I think that we're, if I understand comp plan stuff right, it's about talking, it's about defining some things, but also connecting, communicating clearly that you're going to be looking at things in the future. So we can say, you know, things like we'll be looking at the percentage of, or we're going to be looking at the boundaries where we've been, that you don't have to decide before the
because
I think I'm hearing you say, can we consider that? And that just makes me go, oh my God, we do not have enough time. We need another year to evaluate a boundary line.
Right.
But you can call it out if it's important to look at and call it out as a work plan within a comp plan.
Yeah.
If you even remotely think you might want to do it, you should say it.
One thing that is probably, if we're going to do anything with the districts, that would be, I think, easy to do, would be to actually snap the line up to the city-county divide.
Absolutely.
You know, and then anytime that there's an annexation, that line automatically adjusts. You know, so, because that's, you know, the city's already pulling their piece out from the PIF districts that shared that, you know, is acquired within the city. So I think that might be a pretty easy task, and probably have a lot of favoritism, you know, with citizens as well as councilors.
Well, I guess what I would like to just, from this conversation, what I'd like to do is make sure we're looking at these processes as simple as possible, so that when we get down the pike, if new commissioners, so new county, what do they call them now, councilors. Come around and they say, we think that parks should be one again, we don't have to go through all this process. So, I mean, things change.
And they do.
We've found out this last couple of years that things can change dramatically. And so simplicity is where I'm looking at this. I don't want it to become a bureaucratic nightmare for us. And that's what I think I'm getting to in the conversation here, that we keep it simple.
The big piece is that one of the processes in the comp plan is you're looking at your standards. And this is your opportunity to change your standards.
Right.
So if your standards are good and you're on the right target and you don't want to mess with park impact fees, then, you know, an assessment that basically says, with these current standards, here's what we predict, that's enough. And so you don't mess, we're not looking at a PIF technical document, we're not looking at indexing the fees and saying, you know, they have to go up every 5 years. We're not looking at anything that's more complex or that changes current rates, et cetera, even though they probably should be changed because it's been a long time, but whatever.
Yes.
So, go ahead.
I really believe if we don't keep up with the impact fee changes, we will forever fall
farther
short
behind
of our desired goals. And I mean, I do it from a school district perspective. We have a calculation of what we get, that's what they ask for. Because, you know, if you don't, even if it goes down,
at least you know your...
The last comprehensive plan went as far as saying that VCPRD, that parks and the city and the county should look at indexing and keeping up with the rates of inflation and with growth rates. They went that far, and it was not politically favorable to get any of this passed. So at the very least, that's a relevant statement because the economy has changed and things, they went up and then they went down, now they're going back up again, and it doesn't keep up. The rate of collections for park impacts relative to the system, relative to development, when you get more people, you're always behind in having enough money to build the parks that are needed to maintain your standard and to develop them. So
will you be able to tell for us, we believe that under the current percentage structure or how you're collecting impact fee, that you will be at 95, 85, 65% of your target collections as there's vacant buildable lands model can tell us what's building out. Will you be able to tell us that? Because what I'd like to know is, for example, choose a district, I'm in 9. I want to know that the rest of the vacant buildable lands that are going to be in 9 that will be collected, that whatever structure we've designed here will get us to success. If we think that we should have X number of parks within a mile of your home, then our rate structure, our formula, should support us getting there based on the vacant buildable lands model, in my opinion. But I don't know, are we there? Are we only planning to fail? Or are we planning to over-succeed? Because it looks like we're planning to acquire a lot and construct a little.
Oh, you mean based on 95?
Based on 95.5.
Something like that. Will we? Are we getting that?
I don't know if you're
going to
get that far.
Well, I think some of your questions are going to be more community development wide, and so I think we're going to see that outside of the scope of this particular company.
But if we're planning to only reach 50% success in our goals, then that's an indicator for us of one of two things: increase the rates and fees based on the data, which
that's
is clearly
right.
dependable, or explore other opportunities for meeting those goals through partnerships and acquisitions with other neighbors or developers, and it becomes an immediate action plan that you go to succeed 100% of what you want to do.
Yeah.
So whichever way you go, the lesson that I took away from the contract issue and the doors turn on the lights is we do need to get in front of them and say, this is, you know, these are the topics before us and this is what we're thinking about, and we probably want to start building a PowerPoint today that every time we go before them, you know, this we eventually go back to them at the end with a PowerPoint that says, here's the steps we informed you of. Here's where we ended up, and you can't tell us that we didn't tell you.
That's exactly. Do you guys, are you able to do that from a bigger community development point of view?
As far as what the...
build out?
Well, we have a vacant, community planning is in charge of the vacant buildable lands model.
Right,
so
that's
we,
what
we
I'm
have
asking.
That information.
Right. But do you put that in front of them at points when they're...
In other words, what's your communication with them like these days?
Well, we do take the vacant buildable lands model to them every so often. Actually, Gary Albrecht, who's not here today, he's taking the, we call it the VBLM, the vacant buildable lands model. He's taking that to Planning Commission, I believe, in June. If you want, I could talk to Gary about bringing that in and talking about it if you like.
Well, see, that's what we're really talking about, is that bigger model. We're just a piece of that.
Right.
We use the vacant buildable lands model with our demographer in deciding whether we're going to have enough seats for students in schools. And that's how we, by the numbers, decide what our boundaries are, or what our school, if we have enough schools, if we have enough classrooms, and enough seats, do we need to add on to something? And as we're going through our planning process, that's exactly what we've done.
I think that wasn't that used for the population projection?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what, when we did the level of service, we said here it is now, and here it is in 2025, or whatever the other number was. The other date, it was those population projections. So right. We know, like, how many more people will move into that.
Do we know by district? By district?
By fifth district, yes. Okay. Yes, we have that by
fifth
district.
So,
what it doesn't tell me is translating that to how many households, what's the fee going to be collected, what's the cost for developing X number of apartments. I mean, that would be a little more.
Okay, I really was using this time because Greg didn't make his presentation, and I really wanted to touch on that. Also, I wanted to point, because it came up here, Adam's point about a partnership with another agency that owns some land that can be credited to us as open space because we partnered with another agency can be some of the solutions to how we get to a goal without buying all the land that you just talked about. So, Adam, that was perfect for what... I don't think you're too far out front of us with what you mentioned, because I think that's going to be part of the solution.
Me too.
Absolutely.
We have to identify that we are going to have a shortfall based on what our voters or
what our constituents
can afford.
Yeah.
So if they can't afford the full meal deal like we'd like to have as a community, what is our shortfall, and how can we pursue
partnerships,
grants, what have you, to help fill that gap?
So I just wanted to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't we move on? Thank you for Bill for the piece of that.
Oh, absolutely.
I knew that there was some delays there, and I'm sorry there were, but mm-hmm. we just go on from here. And I will push to see that Barbara and I do have a one-on-one conversation with all three commissioners, not just one.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Especially because Jeannie has come on board since I was out of the country and haven't talked to her in quite some time. So we'll do that. And why don't we just move into the comprehensive plan update, and you'll take that up.
Sounds good. So obviously we had our three open houses last week. First one was in the center. And good turnout, 25 people, mostly equestrian folks, kind of led by Anita Wolf. And she had a group, I think it was Outback, the backcountry horse.
Which one are you talking about first?
The very first one, let's see, the left center open house.
The center.
Yeah, that was last Tuesday, 5-7. Very good layout, great attendance, I thought, and we stayed pretty busy. It was a nice event, but there was a pretty overwhelming theme of equestrian folks there for the most part. So a lot of responses from them, so then of course the next night.
Who did we have for commissioners there?
Well, that was the same night as the county council meeting.
Oh, so
yes, that was the same night that the contracts were.
Okay. We were watching that as they discussed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Adam was there.
Yep, Adam was there. And John.
Okay.
Again. Then, of course, let's see, Ledlow Center. And basically the second page, is this the open house from the Ledlow Center? Is this first page
here? Okay. Yeah. Right, so yeah, we have for the center, we have the summary from that night, and then we have email comments. And with email comments from that night.
I think these are written comments.
Here is, we had a couple ways. People had comment cards they could fill out, but also we have, I think we have four boards that you can actually write on.
Right,
and so people were, flip charts, people were writing notes like crazy on the flip charts, so that's you're also seeing that here.
Right. Here's comments on the survey, is that included in this?
No, I don't think so. Survey. No, this is just from the open houses themselves. Okay. And then some of the boards, some of the boards had dots on them, you know, as to what was the priority for folks, and I don't know if you were able to extrapolate any information from those.
I didn't. I just had, we just took pictures of those boards, and so we have them. But I remember from the center, it was overwhelmingly equestrian.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But on the dot exercise and the comments.
Okay. And so I'm sure that's a key part of the feedback that we probably want to capture as well. Gene, is there a method that we should take a look at, or just have a result, you know, from each board showing how many dots, you know, or a ratio?
I don't know that we want to quantify it with making it seem like it was a vote or a survey or statistically accurate, but anecdotally, it's, I mean, you can list the number of dots and say, you know, five dots were on this one and three dots were on that, showing that these people attend, you know, people with this interest attended. You're not going to give it a lot of extra weight if there's more versus less. It's really just more comments that, you know, we got comments, we got these people ranking or indicating some degree of their priority. It's more qualitative than quantitative. So all of that, the number of dots, the side comments that people wrote on the boards themselves, all the other comments, that's all going to be part of our summarized. And maybe Lori and Gary can categorize those comments so that we can make summary statements and paragraphs about, you know, overall in these open houses and in the survey, there were a great deal of equestrian-related comments, or there were a great deal of trail-related comments, or there were, you know, so that you've got some stronger sense that then reinforces the quantitative assessments that we've done relative to need and demand and that sort of thing. So it's not as important to say, well, this one got four dots and this one got three dots. Because you watch, some people took their three dots and they put it all in the same one. So, it's more anecdotal.
Okay.
I can go back and categorize them, categorize the comments.
Okay. I was saying, we take all this information and we try to come up to some summary, if you want.
Yeah, it's much more, you know, if you were to boil down, you don't have to say, oh, we got an F in horses because we didn't have enough, you know, power said that.
You know, well, basically, like, 12 of the comments is the Will and the Gill family there, so.
Yeah. but you could summarize a lot of what they said and, you know, have it meaty and take other things said by other equestrians and be able to say, overall, here were the top three issues that were expressed by this particular user group. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is really important in our relaying, not in the appendix, but actually in the meat of the comprehensive plan, or, you know, the public involvement and results of the open houses and stuff. So I think that would be the...
Well, I just put my finger on here and read one of these just to get a sense of it. And one said, talked about protecting old growth. Mm-hmm. Timber. When we do a park design, that's one of the early things we do, is identify the trees that have a quality to them and try to work around them. So I feel like people are paying attention, and that's one of those things that we needed to know.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad we do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And of course, on Wednesday night, we had our canvas open house, and it was a little more broad, you know, broad-based as far as what people had concerns about. Still a lot of questions on trails in general, not so much equestrian, but a lot of folks, take a look at some of their addresses. Some came from very far east county, some of them are out of county, you know. But it was interesting. Questions on water, questions on the trails. Again, the trail map was very interesting. What's been completed, you know, how can we make more connections between our trail systems to connect parks, And so, and I know each and every staff member there or a question management member was dealing with different questions.
But sure.
Mine were mostly trails driven. And then questions about Black Moose Lake Park and what we're going to do with Green Mountain, you know, stuff like that. That was essentially it.
I recall the, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Please add in.
I think the mountain bike people showed up at Camas.
They did, yes. And yeah, there was a good group of mountain bikers that wanted definitely more trails. Had a very, very big concern about the Camas School District selling off that property to the north side of Black Moose Lake Park. 43-acre parcel sale where that's going to be, you know, cluster homes. And they have a big six trails in that area that they've traditionally used, and of course that goes away. You know, so that was a big concern. And of course I heard about that at least a month leading up to the open houses because it was taking place. So I got back to the folks. And we've got a very good volunteer advocate that has adopted Lacanus, and so he's got a good pulse of what all the mountain bikers are.
Were people clearer about what was city parks and what was county parks, and did they kind of...
Not really.
See,
no.
My feeling is people don't really give a rip.
No.
As long as it's a park.
Right.
So,
we did get some comments about Vancouver's level of maintenance and such. I heard that there's about how parks were maintained inside the city limits.
Okay.
So there obviously is some confusion.
From the Camas people or the...
I was talking more about at the Salmon Creek meeting.
Oh,
I heard that.
Oh, okay.
Cover that in a few minutes. But not... That said, though, why there's some confusion, I found most people to be very informed on parks at these open houses, too. Mm-hmm.
What was the census? They thought city parks were less maintained than counties, or
it was more individual, you really need to do something about this at this park. Mm-hmm. It was site specific.
Yeah. And were they typically neighborhood parks as opposed to the regional?
I think they were neighborhood parks typically, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Just to jump in about Camas, I had about three people come up to me that were Camas residents asking about... Their concern was, I think, development in Camas and the green space going away.
Yeah.
So I directed them to Camas Park staff.
Yeah. Right. Maybe you should direct them to the developer. enough interest in the community and support in the community for a trail or something that might go through his development certainly would bring about good press and good relations and connectivities, and it helps sell homes and, you know.
I know Camas.
That's what I do.
The Camas planners are very, very wise to that. And they said that we talked to Camas about when they take a look at a development, you know, how does that impact the neighboring area, particularly when it comes to a Black Moose Lake Park. And so we took a look at the plot plan. And it's not an immediate impact to the park because they have a green belt that is an interface in between our park and the homes. So the homes are actually set back quite a ways from the border, and you have this big V of a green belt, and then all the homes are around it. And that also acts their access, their primary access in the Black Moose Lake Park. You don't have all these homes that are trying to drill their own trails into.
Yeah.
So some thought has gone into that. And so I think a lot of the people with concerns were put at ease because of that. But of course,
so when you're walking that access trail that curves up along the development, and they've cleared the trees on the other side, what you're looking at is a green space?
Yes.
That's good to know.
I can answer next. Do something wrong here.
There's a whiteboard behind the map.
There's a map.
Yeah.
The whiteboard?
Yeah, I'll just use the whiteboard. I'll pull that down.
Maybe you can pull it up on Google Maps. Is it a parcel from the high school, or where is the parcel there?
This is, you know, it's next to the new elementary school that just went in.
Okay.
On Brown Road. There's Brown Road, and essentially a lab is like a boundary right here. So here's the new school that just went in right here. And so this is a brand new subdivision. Going right here is Lennar Homes. It looks kind of like that, 325 homes. So this is kind of what it looks like. Here's the green space, and all the homes are going to be like this. This is going to be kind of a
vegetation within the area, big pond right here, a trail that attaches right here, and comes down into the park. There's a bit of it. This is the latest subdivision that was slated to go up against my house. Same kind of layout, especially that section comes all the way over to.
Same developer?
No, it hasn't been sold yet. But this plan has been in place since 2006, so it's not anything new. This is the Lillian Hills right here. And we have currently six trails going into this 43-acre piece. Well, the design on this, same kind of thing. It looks like this. You might see like three homes up against our property, but the rest are off in the distance. And then the same kind of concept with the trail that comes down into the park. So it's not like our Lillian Trail, incidentally. Kind of like this, so we'll lose part of the real trail if they do decide to do anything with it. My guess is you won't see any changes. So luckily, we've actually taken put some thought into how that development's going to look as it abuts our park. We had several pleas of people wanting us to desperately buy this piece of property so they don't lose that recreational component. But, at the cost that they're asking, this is still going to go forward. Plus, it's outside of our
Well,
299-acre park that we've got right here.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to justify adding to that when we could actually build someplace else.
What about the opportunity of, a lot of our lands are based on property boundaries that are not geographically laid out but are politically laid out. Is there, when they do these developments, and this might be a question more for you, can we accept land so that we get more of a geographic property boundary as opposed to a political property boundary? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Not quite, no.
Well, let's just, for this sake, and I don't want to make a huge conversation about it, but if this is going to be a natural area, could our park boundary look like that? As opposed to a straight line.
It could, but we'd probably be responsible for maintaining that area.
Well, agreements can be put in place, long-term agreements with developers for developing things within.
Right. I think it's possible. Okay.
I think that's something we need to pursue at some point in time.
The other big lesson that I took away from that is when we build a large regional park and there's vacant lands around it, keep our trails well back from those vacant lands if there had been an extra 20 foot of tree buffer there.
I suspect back in the day when Lackamas Park was dedicated and the trails were built, there may or may not have been survey, and the trails as they were built may have been remnant roads and they just were as is. I mean, there's so many, sort of historic things that you just accepted.
It's interesting because, the trail that's cut off, well, it's lined by a barbed wire fence that's been there since the dawn of time.
Right.
Well, the survey lines are 8 feet from that barbed wire fence onto our side of the property.
Yeah.
So, surveys back then probably weren't,
well. Well, now whenever parks are acquired, one of the first things that's done, even before the closing, is there's a survey done so you know what is the actual land you're getting. And then a whole level one process, as it's called, goes through to say, establish the boundary, see who's encroaching on it, clean up any encroachments, get that boundary established, and even fence it so that you have a clear line of what's a public park and what is. And then something that old, old barbed wire, hay field or pasture or forest, or it's just,
Typically our practice nowadays, whenever we acquire a piece of property, the first thing we do is survey and fence it.
Yeah,
we put up a good neighbor fence and establishes the boundary.
Well, I'm working on a master plan for a state park in Wyoming right now. And Wyoming, there's no trees, so you're focusing on a piece of property with a view.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to convince now, the thinking is some of the lands don't have to be state park, but the view show corridor is as important as the land itself.
Absolutely.
That's where I was going with this.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't have to have the land, but we certainly don't want a big old house sitting there neither. So that's where I want to look at the natural boundaries versus the political boundaries for some of our parklands, so we don't lose our corridor views. That's all I was trying to
say. You know, the thing about development, you know, we should be taking a look at when you have some monster developments going in, we should be interacting with the developers and figuring out what we can do to minimize impacts, you know, and then also create easements, accesses into potential properties, you know, for corridors for connectivity purposes. So there's a lot of things that we actually need to engage in. You know,
what's great about the Parks Department being in the counties and in the cities is if you have a good entry point for that discussion right on early, when the developer or the architect or the engineer comes to you and says, we're thinking about... I mean, that's like, hey, we might know a year before they come to us with the site plan review, and that's the time that you really need to have those discussions and conversations. For schools, we, you know, we wait till the site plan review is coming up, and if there's something that's been submitted to city and county, and then we go, did we know about that? You know, and so, yeah, because there's no way for us to know, and oftentimes developers don't value your opinion. I think that they should.
In the past, I will say that both community development departments in the city and the county would vet all those early site plan developments through Parks. Now, Parks doesn't have planning entities, so there isn't enough staffing to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, you actually need people thinking about that and taking action on it at any given time.
Way early in the process. I mean, we had a development that I caught wind of that didn't quite end up yet in county, but I think county staff only knew about it a full year and a half before I did. I was just watching the property going, boy, I can't believe it's been vacant for so long. And then one day, down, you know, across the email comes 250 home development, and I call them sort of in a semi-panic around, hey, you know, when we did Erickson Farms with the developer, we worked around and we changed our boundaries well in advance to ensure we could understand and house that capacity. And, you know, the developer, as nice as they were, and I knew some of the people, they go, oh, we probably won't even start construction for a year. And I'm like, a year, it puts me in crisis.
Yeah.
And now I'm in entry school. So,
in 2 years, you got 250 new kids. And
well, luckily, the generation rate doesn't bring that many, but yeah. On the other hand, it's like, now what? You know, like, how nimble can we be? And we can't be that nimble. So, getting to know that early is so...
I've never worked in community development we used to be part of community development, but I've never worked in current planning in Washington. But my experience in current planning is that when you have an application, there's service provider notices.
It's too late for us.
Okay.
It's too late.
It's already gone through attention.
Yeah, when someone met at someone's house and said, we ought to develop this property. What do you think about that? Like, that's what we need to know, but that's not even possible.
Well, I can tell you for, like, in Green Mountain case, I was in 2005 working, I spent probably maybe two full months of time working with the developer on how the county and the developer could develop that as making some boundary adjustments. So I don't know where the economy went bad, and I assume it's just sitting there now. But
no, it's not sitting there now, but I know it's going through the early development review phase. But
see, we know. We know all the good stuff.
But, I mean,
we spent
months working with them on what we could do to have some boundary line adjustments so that both could be successful.
Right.
I don't know where that went now. I mean, it's been years.
Yeah, and I'm not involved in that process, and I know it's with the city of Camas and maybe public, development review with counties.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have we beat that one up?
Yeah.
We want to go to the third one now?
So on that first night last week, discussion changed a little bit more. Of course, being back out in Salmon Creek, that's close to Open Creek, so we had a lot of equestrians again. But there were a lot of folks that were very curious as to when the rest of the MPD parks are going to be completed. You know, and that was pretty much the topic that I discussed most of the night. and
that's
very, very strong push for getting. They didn't mention all of the parks, but four of the six remaining neighborhood parks were definitely discussed. Particularly Cozy Camp and Sorensen were the two that were that I probably listened to testimony for at least an hour on. By several people, not just a couple. Sorensen and Cozy Camp. Cozy Camp's up in Mount Vista.
Yeah.
And Sorensen's is off of 99th Street, due west of Columbia River High School, up towards Goleta.
Where is Cozy Camp in the map?
Yeah, I can't see Cozy Camp.
We were
going to
do it today.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So it's called the it's called Stanford.
Jeff has a camp.
There's a neighborhood show that day.
Really?
Yeah.
Wild.
Or into April.
Okay.
Jeff,
talk
about that
one.
This
is Fairfax Fairgrounds.
Okay.
Here's
WSU
campus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
bad
for
Angela.
She doesn't
know
about it.
Never
mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but when it comes to boundaries, I only study 7 miles.
Right. It's sort of part of it over here. And then that's most of the two big parks. The Tower Crest, another one.
Very,
very, that is, it's south of Minnehaha, west of Andreessen, in that area.
Yeah.
And so that park was mentioned. What else? The two parks that were really not mentioned were Otto Brown.
Or what?
Otto Brown. Yeah, Otto Brown Neighborhood Park. That's in the North Sifton area.
Can you point that out?
Yeah.
Is that interesting?
Jeremy can bring that here.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Lovely.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Sure. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.
This is taking forever, though, so...
Okay. I'll close mine. Are you on GIS?
Yeah. Are you?
I am. Sorry. Okay, now you do have quicker
success. You're like, I have it right here.
I know.
Okay. Wait, let me go check.
But I can't find it. Not like you can type in Sorensen Park and define parcel and get it. You got to go to Google and find the address and put it in and go in here. So I'm not as savvy.
You can have my house.
What me?
You could also try the ClarkParks.org website.
Well, this is a full up street view, so hopefully.
Just so you know, we're going to high speed internet here. It should be hopefully by our next meeting.
Oh, I'm going to
dial up.
Are we on dial up here?
Wow,
we
look at that hole there.
You know, the neighbor's free Wi-Fi and out downstairs. You got a hot spot.
What school is that right there?
That's quicker.
That's up in Sandwood.
Yeah,
that.
This is about
Sandwood
House.
York.
Hey, it's not mine.
Which one is that?
That's I didn't tell you. It's not mine.
York.
Y-O-R-K.
Yeah, 132nd Avenue.
York.
And 99th Street is right here.
So you got Hawkinson Park to the northeast.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the houses there to the south. Right. Wow.
No, yeah.
It's amazing about the property. There's nothing around it. Like, there's homes along the street here. It's really built up.
There's going to be
the
more.
South 40 Hawkinson Community Park. Yep. It's with park.
And we have Cherry Park right up here.
Hawkinson.
So once you get to school, let's try to go over to Calvary.
There are going to be more.
Man, try to drive it.
They're going
to
be more.
That's amazing.
You can see why they needed an elementary there.
Boy, yes.
You don't even need buses at that point. You just got to
let everyone know. No, a walking school bus.
Yeah.
There it's where you're at. Now you're on the right track.
Is that it? 63rd. I think that's it.
I think you're right. Let's bring it up a little closer, maybe. I don't know whether they're interested in this piece of property.
Tower Crest is longer and skinnier, isn't it?
Yeah, so. Really south. And we're zoom in so you can find Andreessen.
Andreessen's on your right?
Yeah,
you
Andreessen's right. Andreessen, so.
500 is
there. 54 right up here.
Thank you.
That's it, yeah.
Must be two parcels.
So it's adjacent to a city Vancouver water facility.
So let's bring it up on the aerial.
It's the area is clicked. It's just taken.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is the address of the property. This is the piece that we're developing right here.
Okay.
And here's the city of Vancouver's piece right here. And the tower should be right about here someplace.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. There you go. Okay.
Now we're really in there. See your tower.
Looking forward to that high speed
internet. All right. There we go.
Okay.
Now let me have it reloaded again.
You can see most of it.
So that's the city piece, obviously.
Okay, so that's county two.
Both of them.
Here's about county, so this is a part that's planned to be developed. I believe the plan is also, I think that's city. Or is this county?
No, that's county.
That's county, okay. So, the west side is coming in, and what Linda's talking about is trying to preserve this access coming in along this way from the south.
Nice work.
Because there's a trail here, and all this area right here is really unused. As you can see, this is fenced in with,
mm-hmm.
8-foot barbed wire with razor wire on top. And we hope that they're not going to fence off the rest of it.
What do you think the future of that south, that property right there?
I don't know. You know, it's... Some of the water department, maybe they'll deed it over to the city parks. I don't know. I would have to ask them that specific question.
Is it in
question.
The city limits, or is it the city limits right there, or is that the...
Yeah. So, how does that work in
there? It's owned by the city, and you purchased the three parcels above it. Would you go, hey, we're interested in joining these four parcels together?
Oh, yeah.
Like a trail that goes through, or do you need a darker?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's...
So this gray area is the city limits.
Yeah, I agree.
At the time that this was developed, we were city and county combined, so it was still, the merge.
So refresh it. City owns it because...
The city owns the tower because it's part of the water.
It's a water supply.
And you put your water there.
And they bought the full property.
You don't care about
it. When they developed that, they bought the full property.
They probably have extra property in case they need to add another tower for capacity. That's my guess.
No, I remember buying it. They bought it because it was a vacant. It was a piece of property they could buy the whole property for rather than splitting it. So that's what.
Yeah, question mark split it, and it would be.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So is that correct, Linda?
Pardon?
This is the south piece you're talking about. Water
that's the south piece, right? Because we basically had an arrow look at the top, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our tower park to me looks like an arrow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's got a big point.
You're talking about three parcels.
Because there are three parcels here, so it comes down, and
it's pointing.
This isn't us.
No.
And it's twice as big as we are.
Right.
And if you're going to develop this, it seems like we should.
That should be an agreement. Very similar to what Adam was talking about with WashDOT.
Right.
Yep.
These are already both in public ownership. One's dedicated to parks. The other's dedicated to water utility. If the water utility doesn't meet the other half, you could enter an agreement with the city of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. And why have to lay water to another water tower? Why not have our because it's been where I'm in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Why not have the neighbors have access? There's a path here of some sort, but. Mm-hmm. Why have the maintained
could just be a public access easement that just says you allow informal path to go all the way through it.
Right. It's pretty easy to do. And I believe that's the case right now. They just pass it down here someplace.
Are you familiar?
I think accessibility is the most important part.
So is the city, are you familiar with that strange, I don't quite understand it all, the agreement they have with their grant money and why they're getting out of Waterworks Park and putting...
Is this part of that? No. That's the property. It's over to the east portion of Vancouver Mall.
I thought it was, but I thought, I don't know. Is it tied into that?
No. Actually, the property was enough.
They have some regulations that require them to basically fence off all the well fields, in the Waterworks Park. So they're going to lose all that ground.
Right.
Since it was encumbered by grants, they had to find another piece that was equal or greater value. And so that's why they came after so strong to get Schaefer. So our interest obviously was it was basically for the good of the neighborhood, because if we held on to Schaefer, it could be 20 plus years before we even thought about developing it. So the city, you know, losing the park and having to build, we figured that, you know, just within hopefully a couple of years.
Definitely swap.
Okay, it could be. Yeah.
Plus selling our
You need some land out there, is that it?
Anyways, so needless to say, the finishing up the remaining MPD parks was a monster topic, and then of course the equestrians, and then there was people that talked about bicycling. People wanted more BMX tracks, and what do you call that type of riding?
Track.
What's that?
Pump track.
Pump track. Where you don't have pedals.
Pump track.
It's a bike without pedals, essentially.
It's a what?
Bike. A bike without pedals. You use momentum like you do when you're on a swing. You push your legs back and forth.
Yeah. It's the most dangerous bike out there.
and basically,
sit on it. You kick your legs out. Are you standing?
There's
And that's what consumed my 2 hours, and I don't know what all the other folks
The pump track people were interesting, and I heard some interesting stories about their adventures in the pump track, mountain biking and whatnot.
Yeah.
So one takeaway I have from this, and it seems to be a recurring theme to this process, is that there's a lot of discussion about trails as opposed to parks.
Yes.
If there's one thing that I can encapsulate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It seemed like trails were probably the primary topic. Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. And trails within parks.
Yeah.
Because
right.
That's the other. I mean, a pump track is a trail within a park.
Yeah. And we had one map that showed our developed trails countywide versus the planned trails. And there's a lot of interest on that particular map for some reason. I mean, it's just people really wanted to see what trails we had in mind to build in the near future. And we actually asked them to draw on any of the trails that may not have been thought about.
I think for all kinds of users, it seemed to me, it's just my impression overall. I mean, the center definitely with the equestrian people for sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's, I can tell you from past history, that was the way it was then too.
I think there's
so you had 30, 25, and 59. 50 or 80, depending on how you look at it. So those, they weren't three people sitting around and talking about our park system.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
No.
Just in general sense, I would say the open houses were very successful. And why do I say that? Well, we had people turn out and had input or interest. They were not shy about providing it. Moreover, we had a constant flow of people. These 2 hours went very quickly.
Yes.
You know, we had people virtually at the open house constantly, and usually they showed up 15 minutes early. So.
Yes.
Well, that's good. Do you feel that the people were there because we did get the word out and push pretty hard? Because I did see a lot of publicity on it.
It seemed that way.
I think there was a little bit about that. I think people genuinely care about their parks, too, more than anything else. There was one thing that we did, and I was a little dubious of it, but I talked to several people who didn't see them, and Bill and his staff actually posted flyers in the parks themselves, and I talked to several people. That's how they knew about the open house. It wasn't the email blast, wasn't the news release or anything like that.
That's good to hear.
Adam, I think you were going to say something.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a side note about the equestrian people, is a lot of those people like loops. So they love to park and then just rather something where it's very easy instead of turning back, so I throw that out there.
I saw some comments.
I'll be talking about loops in my presentation.
I think in general people like loops. I would say hiking or biking.
Doesn't matter whether it's hiking or biking.
Yeah, or on a horse or whatever.
That tends to be very loopy.
One final comment that I heard quite a bit about was the need for parking facilities at different parks. How are you going to access them? Is it safe to access them?
Yes.
I heard comments about neighboring parks that way too. I know Bill has heard quite a bit about that.
As much as the concept is there that people are going to all walk to their neighborhood park, it's a good concept. It just doesn't translate.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you have
situation.
Especially if you have to cross a busy road.
Correct.
That's where it's all right.
Yes.
So I thought about that too because I saw the flyer on Fazio Park, I think it was, with the blue tape, keeping it up there, which is great. But I thought when we do signs, signage in the future. Maybe, you know, down here with Jensen, they've got the encasement where you can encase a something. Something like that, as we think about park design in the future with our signage, is there a way on the side of the sign or wherever where you can,
almost a neighborhood newsletter thing could be in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That would be a really cool idea. And you can always put our information up there.
Sure, that's a great idea.
And we do have a look at Frenchman's Water Park, and the only thing we experience with that is vandalism.
I thought about it too, because the schools, you know, we have to spray occasionally. And we have the stake and the yellow sign, and someone's laminated the new one. And I mean, they go up. I imagine our guys take 2 days to put all those signs up across the district to say they're going to spray during a certain window, and then if it rains, you got to go out and you got to do it all right. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine how wasteful that is. So, yeah, I just kept thinking about our own scenario, like, how can we do better? And then I saw some taped up stuff in the back. Okay.
Just wanted to add real quick as far as notice. We sent out an email blast to the 2016 comp plan update email list, and I think there's 1,400 different emails on that list, so they received it. And then we are in the process of creating a sub list for the Parks Master Plan, and currently we have 395 separate emails.
Nice.
Yeah.
And are we the board on that list?
Yes.
Okay.
And I know that Jeff and Ann did a great job of outreach. You know, we were did put a 5,600 email blast on that as well, and so that was really great. Plus I hope the CBTV video, you know, did a good job of getting the word out as well. So thank you for your help on that, by the way. So basically, next steps: our outreach efforts are going to entail stakeholder meetings, and so April 13th will be our meeting with NAC.
April 13th?
Yes, that's correct. And then, of course, we have three other ones that we need to schedule thereafter. We talked about that just prior to this meeting. And so we'll try to get this scheduled. I think we'll mostly be NAC meetings, with the exception of the city parks leaders from around the area. That'll be a day meeting. And so if we can get some Parks Advisory Board members there to back us up, that'd really be great. So
just as soon as you have those dates.
We will try to get those scheduled ASAP, because I know it's kind of the essence. So. Hey, Jeremy, you want to pull up the Swanson property?
For the softball people.
What about the... What about the monkey, survey monkey?
That's a question we need to talk about. I wonder if it's... The survey monkey, we're going to wait until after basically our last stakeholder meeting before we close that down. And that's the platform that we're doing the survey on right now.
Okay.
And so far, what's our number right now, Jeff?
I was going to take a look at the most current number before I came over today, and that got sidetracked. I can tell you earlier this week we had 680. I'm sure we must be well over 700 responses by now. One thing about the open house is that we did have turnover, so people could use laptops to take the survey, and it was actually quite popular. Sometimes we had people waiting to take the survey because all the laptops were occupied.
I was impressed.
Let's just put the Survey Monkey on the agenda for the meeting coming up on the 27th. Is that when our next, that's the date of the next workshop?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So let's just put that on there, and we won't talk about today.
Okay.
Because it's a topic
absolutely
we need to focus on.
And there's one other thing, you know, one other platform that we need to talk about, and that's the Mind Mixer platform.
The what?
And
that's the other one.
Yes. And I guess the question is do we want to pull the trigger and get that going, or are we a little too late?
Yeah, the value of the Mind Mixer was before your open houses.
Yeah.
To have several weeks of online discussion that would trigger a lot of the interest, get people talking about it, heighten the anticipation, if you will, and learn a little bit more about what are the open topics that people are that are interested in. At this point, we've missed that two-week window when we wanted to do it. Actually, we would probably have put it online that first week of February.
Okay.
And it didn't happen. So I don't know what value there would be in it now.
Right.
Because that's just one more way of doing sort of a public engagement. And if we've done this big piece of public engagement, even though we decided to keep the survey going another month longer, it's sort of after the fact. So
okay.
It all depends on how you want to look at it, because yeah. I could argue there's value doing public engagement outside of the comp plan process.
Yeah.
You know, well, you're still accepting email comments and such. It's just a question of whether the effort is worth the payout.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's really
yeah. Relative to the comp plan, we probably missed the best window.
Yeah. Yes.
But relative to people engaging in what parks are doing and becoming advocates for parks and supporters of parks and learning more about the park system, I mean that's we've hit that repeatedly in this process about you know there's a lack of information exchange that people are suffering from, and they don't know where things are.
Mm-hmm. And we do have 6,000 or so emails that we could use to publicize Mind Mixer if we decide to go that route.
Well, why don't we put that both of those on the agenda for the 27th and talk about that and see what we want to do. So we're prepared to kind of put it into the frame of mind that we need to be. Okay, and then you've already talked stakeholder.
Yes.
Are going to be
yes, and we'll send those
scheduled
as soon as we get those established.
So why don't we just move into the updates? Oh, we don't need that.
I've got a couple of things, Kelly.
Go into your new business.
I've got a couple of things that are not on the agenda, and that's because largely they hit me yesterday. For the most part, wild day yesterday. First thing, this is Northeast Center Easton, right here. Northeast Center East Street. This is Club Green Meadows, the golf course,
right here.
This is a 36-acre parcel that was owned by Elizabeth Swanson. And she has basically won Parks to take over this property.
Wow, cool.
And so she's a living trust on it right now. With the intent that as soon as she passed away, that we would take this property. So I met with the attorney. He was most desperately wanting to meet with us. So we called a meeting yesterday. He met with us to talk about potentially trying to take this property, have get it deeded over to us this week. He was really anxious. And it's basically going to be wildlife habitat for the most part. There's a house barn on the property. There's a creek that runs right here. And the creek, I haven't actually walked the property yet, but it's beautiful. I think, Jane, you walked it and liked it.
Yeah, what's not the let's talk a deal here.
But the thing you think about is these, you get a cat park to the north. Got an archery on 70th Street and at least 72nd Avenue to the west.
What's the acreage?
What's
33 acres?
33 or 35?
33.63 acres. So it's a drive to destination. We've got Crossroads Community Church right here.
Oh, that's
So basically, it's a drive to destination, and obviously, we want to take that property. You know, it's got great value to us, and there are some restrictions that we have to work through. I believe Gene did an actual
concept
plan on this. You know, showing a trail system and all that looks great, and so we might actually gain this property here in the next couple weeks.
I love it when something like that.
That's just a summary. So I think it was proposed back in 2011. That's is that right, Jane? When all this kind of, I see all the documentation is dated right around 2011.
It went over a period of a year or so.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
Yeah. But I think that was her intent, just to deed it over to the county. So it's a property that we're going to get for free for the most part. So
who is this lovely donor?
Huh?
Elizabeth Swanson.
Elizabeth Swanson. You've got a smaller map of it right here.
So the interstate system took their the majority of their 80-acre farm that they used to have.
Yeah.
As you can see, it's kind of close.
Yeah, kind of part of there. So.
And she spent the bulk of her 97 years in this house with her husband, who's deceased like 20 years ago. And she really likes the idea of maintaining some of the pastoral setting that was a significant part of her life. So
it's pretty cute. She wants us to preserve all the wildlife except for the coyotes and the raccoons.
She lost one of her puppies to either a raccoon or a coyote.
not fond about those two.
No. So open season.
What's her name again?
That's why we have
Elizabeth Swanson.
She's in a nursing home now, and that house is actually rented out, and that provides her some of the revenue she needs to have to live in the nursing home.
That is just awesome.
Yes. The reason the attorney was so anxious is that the county assessors were going to lift the agricultural status on the property, and if they could not provide proof that they were using it as a commercial ag land, and we did, Jeremy, we got the information, but the back taxes amounts to $523,000 that would have been owed, mm-hmm. but there's a RCW provision that states if they're deeding it over to the county, I think they're off the hook.
Wow. So, yeah.
And that was my concern is I want to make sure that either she or the parks wouldn't have to pay for the taxes, the back taxes, because quite simply we can't afford it.
Yeah, right.
It would just wipe out our whole PIF acquisition fund. Sure. We only have like $273,000 in PIF 7. So, anyways, I think this is going to be a win-win for us. This is going to be good. So.
Might change the level of service in that district.
Probably. I suspect as well.
So let me know when that happens so I can...
Yeah, we'll make that modification on the complex.
Change the stuff.
Okay. Want to zoom over to Daybreak?
Do we know anything about the community church there as far as would they be willing to work with you? I'm just staring at all that parking thinking.
Oh, man, yeah, that's a big community church. I believe this is the one that Councilor Medora goes to. So.
Bill, did you put that sign on?
What's that?
No.
I did not put it in there. That's okay. Don't worry about it. Well, I think you've all got this handout right here.
Yeah.
And what this is, it's a part of the master plan that Dean was largely responsible for back in 2010. And this is Daybreak Park. This is your nearest park, Adam.
Sweet.
And this is the master plan for Daybreak. And this basically, the development aspect of it is to the west of the road, 82nd Avenue. And the thing that I want to point to your attention today, first and foremost, Pat Lee's been in touch with me. Last year, and this is last week, he wants to take a look at getting grants. Funds to try to initiate development of this park, mm-hmm. and with the equestrian community being so apparent there at our open houses, I thought it'd be wise to bring the master plan for Daybreak along, because as you can see in the lower right corner of the park is a big equestrian at the center.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yes, and Clark County Saddle Club has currently got their property up for sale on 503. That's right next to the Square Dance Center. And they're looking for a place to relocate and a place to partner so that they can rebuild their center. I think they have a membership, Jeremy, of how many? 300 and some people?
It's cap, 300 and some cap.
Right. And so I don't think they're very particular as to where they want to relocate to, but they do want to partner. And this came to mind pretty readily, because this whole equestrian center component, I don't think that we were intending on building it.
No.
Intending on a partner doing that for us. And so it might be a very good relationship. So that coupled with a grant to help us with the park, we might have something going on here. So we're not necessarily locked into that particular site. We did offer up some other opportunities if this did not work out for them. They do have a couple rodeos per year that this site might not be able to accommodate. I think the parking was probably the biggest problem with it. Because they can have 300-400 people or 500 people at a rodeo pretty easily. And so that might be problematic. And I don't know, what they have right now for a footprint of acreage at the Clark County Saddle Club, I believe, is 14 acres.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that this is probably about 20, but I don't know what the wetland setbacks are, if that parking lot can be expanded, the footprint of it or not.
Is that open to the public, or is this specifically?
It's going to have public access. If it's on public property, it has to have public access available to it. Clark County Saddle Club, they do charge dues, for the use of the facility.
Oh, okay.
But that's something we'd have to work out an agreement that if it's not programmed out for rodeos or whatever, that public does have access to this.
Awesome.
There's an indoor arena, or covered arena, that is, outdoor warm-up area. That's pretty standard. No stables, nothing like that. And nor do they have stables right now where they're currently located. It's a day use facility. So, you know, we might have something going on here.
All right.
And, you know, this could very well be our next regional park that's developed. Mm-hmm. And so thank you, Gene, for putting all the work into this.
So let me just a cautionary note.
Yes.
Just so you know, when we were looking at this and looking at what the cost would be, as soon as you develop this west side, you have to do road improvements.
Yes.
There's a pretty significant road improvement required here.
Yep.
So even though it's, you know, county road, you don't have to put sidewalks all along it. We looked at a minimum amount of development, like what would be the smallest thing we could do, and in terms of a first phase, and I think it's written in the report, mm-hmm. so you might want to check that. But I think it was $2.5 million to do the road improvements, mm-hmm. the entrance, and the shelter, mm-hmm. just that.
Right.
With its park.
We had
so. Just think, okay, we need, you know, a grant and whatever. The $2.5 million really just to kick it off. So
and you don't see much when it's all done.
No, you basically have your entry road and that first shelter near where the existing parking is and the additional parking and that little park road and the road improvements that are required. So, you know, this it's tough to get $2.5 million.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's interesting to bring that up to you because last year when that lead brought that, mm-hmm. brought up the grant. We actually got it together with transportation okay. and talked about, because this road improvement actually creates an underpass mm-hmm. to provide mm-hmm. access to underneath the road
yes, to the east side of the park.
And they just thought that was just way too cost prohibitive. So something's got to be changed here.
Yeah.
So some kind of a better access to go from east yeah. to west. How do we do that? But yeah, that's definitely a big consideration because that will require road improvement.
Well, then part of the reason that it was realigned was we talked to transportation about the existing entrance on Daybreak Park, and they said if you create another park on the other side, you have to relocate where your entrance has to be moved, and they wanted to decommission the existing entrance.
Yep.
For both. So if you don't do an underpass,
you're kind of messed up.
You've yeah. lost the existing Daybreak Park.
Yeah.
So. In the process. Wow. So there was a little challenge. That's what we were looking at, and that's why the master plan basically said, how do you do this and mm-hmm. create connectivity? Unless you can buy the piece of property next door and get an easement.
And that might be a cheaper alternative.
Yeah.
So
very well.
Yeah. I mean that was ideally that's what you'd want to do.
Yeah, that is a kind of it's a sketchy to get actually go into the old Daybreak. It's pretty
really
sketchy.
Bad, it's really bad corner.
Right on the corner, you're on a downhill right. slope. And you have to kind of peep up. And
traffic goes
yep.
very fast.
Yeah, it is kind of somewhat dangerous there, the way the mm-hmm. is laid out. And so that is a possibility. They're taking a hard look at this. And also, another thought was to build at Whipple Creek, you know, mm-hmm. where the Stratford mm-hmm. Raspberry Fields are at currently.
Yeah.
You know, that's got an old master plan that definitely needs to be upgraded.
Yeah.
They were very curious about the stables that were on Northwest 11. That's been recently sold, so we lost that opportunity, which was a heartbreaker. But we're still taking a look at buying an easement somehow, some way, through there so that we can connect with Fairmont's Park. But, you know, as far as trying to put their footprint onto the existing property that we do own, it's a good possibility. Jeremy also thought about maybe putting it out there at the north part of Hawkinson. You know, we always kind of thought that might be a phase two of a big soccer complex or something, but, you know, there's two big parcels out there, right, Jeremy? 40 and 53 acres. Mm-hmm. And either, you know, the 40 acre alone would be ample enough for this. Which also, there's another equestrian center just around the corner to the west of Hawkinson, so those two could actually be linked together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's some value there as well.
That would be
Silver Buckle.
Silver Buckle is to
oh,
the west.
Yes.
It basically touches Hawkinson on the west side.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a call for equestrian trails through Hawkinson, so if you link the two together, mm-hmm. you know, there's some merit there. So.
Well, I'm just looking at the time, and it's a little bit after 3 already. I can't believe it.
Well, can I just say, I appreciate that you thinking about how to make this work within some existing structures. I don't know what the percentage of horse equestrian folks is to everybody else in the community that uses parks, but I imagine it's not a very high percentage. Not like people who use trails or people who use park, you know, the fields or, you know, just the percentage must be much, much lower. So for us to funnel $2.5 million into something just for an equestrian experience is a unique, maybe it's good, but it's a unique expenditure.
They threw out a number to me there at one of the open houses that we have probably the third largest equestrian community in the state.
Yeah.
Agricultural
community.
My mom and my aunt. All those numbers will have to be kept taken into consideration.
Oh, really?
We know that. Let's do a wrap up here around the table, starting with Adam. You got anything you want to say for the good of the day before we adjourn?
I love partnerships, so we can maximize. You know, I think the idea, just want to get head home. I think the idea of partnering with WashDOT would be wonderful. Because they, you know, they're constantly building, right? They're constantly adding new roads, and they have lots of land. So, I mean, it couldn't be just maybe not just this project, but future, you know, other projects that have gone on where it's just land that's just sitting there. It's not doing anything, right? So if we can use it in some way that doesn't harm what, you know, what they get a benefit of it, and we can get a benefit from it. I mean, it's a win-win.
Right. So. The school district may find it the usable educational component as well. So
yeah.
I agree.
We've partnered with WashDOT.
Yeah, many times. Jennifer?
I'm good.
You're good.
I'm good. Sorry, today I had a responsibility, had to wrap up.
Okay. Well, let me, I want to take a moment and thank you guys all for putting up with me on Skype for the last couple of months.
Cool.
And it was interesting to sit and hear everybody, but not. It was kind of hard to interact with you, but
right.
It was certainly made it easier for me to stay abreast of everything without having to come back and really get back in the swing of things. So I appreciate your patience all with me. And
yeah, it was great.
If any of you are happen to miss a meeting, don't be shy about asking for the opportunity to Skype, because it does work and it does keep you in the loop. And if I would have missed the meeting with Medora, I would have been so far out of the loop of things, because it was a very interesting experience that you guys went through, and it was probably even more interesting for me for being back and looking at everybody's faces as you were listening. And so, that said, I appreciate that time. I also want to remind you, there is, I don't know if any of you are planning on going to the Parks Foundation fundraiser tonight at Shorty's. So it's tonight, I believe.
Tomorrow's the kids' day.
Yeah, tomorrow's the kids' day. And then on April 30th, and this should be put on our calendar on the back of, is the Parks Foundation luncheon. We really need to try to get as many people as possible to that.
Mm-hmm.
I know Barbara's been working hard with them.
We've got six going, I think.
And we've got some grants into the works.
Yes.
We also have some nominations in there and some stuff. So, our partnerships, as you spoke, with Parks Foundation is a critical component of what we do. And we have to participate to get them to understand we're part of the system. So, and I just had emailed or just texted a message at Barbara asking when that luncheon is. It's April 30th at the Hilton. She just sent back that. So she's feeling better, she says, right? probably, yes.
And do we get tickets somewhere? Or how?
I can send
everyone
a link.
That'd be great. So I wanted to bring those two things up. I think that's all I had for right now. Other than next week, or next 2 weeks from now, on the 27th, I will be doing a presentation on trails. And it's going to be a little longer because it was a presentation I made at the National Conference in Baltimore, which I'll modify to some degree, but when I did it there, it was an hour and a half long, so I've got to cut a lot. I'm not going to bore you with an hour and a half.
Late.
You'll love it. No.
You know, people lose their attention after 5 minutes.
Well, I'm hoping I get 10 out of you.
5 minutes.
But one of the pieces of why I want to make that presentation, or at least a good chunk of it, is that it'll show you Adam's got a vision today about this piece of property out there, but there are so many steps to get to the point. Much like what I mentioned is in 05, I spent a couple of months working with a developer on Green Mountain. We may see 3 years from now coming to us something that's about Green Mountain and how it makes our park system better. What makes our park system unique is working with partners to make bigger things happen. I use the example of the Waterfront Renaissance program. It took 20 years of planning before we even started doing trail pieces. So everything takes a lot of time to get there. And, you know, we've got a number of you that have not been involved with parks for the last, except for the last few months. And for the next 20 years, you're going to be working on, I hate to scare you with that, it's not meant to be scary, but you're getting the groundwork now for things that you're going to be working on, whether it's being on a commission or just being a good citizen for the future, if we're going to have a park system that really makes a difference for the community. So Bill can attest to that too. I'm sure you've got things that you worked on 10, 15 years ago that are finally coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. And I know you have. So. Todd can tell you stories.
Todd can tell you stories like you and me.
So I want to give you a little bit of background that is about trails and how some of the things came about that is more than you need to know, but will give you some history on some of that. While at the same time, I will try to focus in on the county's trails master plan and how important it is to this. Because we all know from these public meetings that people are interested in trails, but they're interested in trails that loop or connect or part of the transportation system. We know about that because you and I have worked a lot over the years on systems that require not just parks, but transportation. And in many cases, transportation is a bigger animal than we even know. It obviously is. So anyway, I'll plan to spend, I don't know, maybe you can give me 25 minutes on that. We'll see.
So Kelly, can I suggest that you kick off that meeting with your more historic and qualitative approach to trails, and then the second half of the meeting I can offer trails assessment that we were going to do a month ago, but
right.
We got our delay. So
that's
so
what I was going to suggest. Yeah.
You would have a more qualitative, and then I'll offer the quantitative. Here's the summary of all the different plans, and here's how many miles of trails we have. Here's, you know, to go to more the, you know, approaching more the what should our recommendations be.
Right.
To capital facilities.
That's what I was hoping you would say.
As long as you're going to take an hour and a half. We're going to keep them going for another 20 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Another pot of coffee.
Yeah.
Stand up.
So it is a workshop. It is a workshop session. So it'll just be informational.
Okay.
Candace, any word?
Good.
Appreciate you being here. And I know your mind's turning. I can feel it clear over here. And then the following meeting, I would hope that we will hear from you on your view of the park system. Would that be?
Why do you love parks?
Yeah.
Why do you care about parks? What do they mean to you? Is that sort of
how does you fit
where
into
you
where
live?
Do you
where's
live?
Your closest,
closest
where's your closest
park?
Yep. Do you use them? Whatever.
She's mentioned a couple of them. I think the most recent ones. I don't know if you feel comfortable doing it.
Well, not next meeting, because next one is going to be all about trails. The following one, that would be the second week in April.
And just one quick second. When are we going to shut the survey monkey off?
Probably after our final stakeholder interviews is mid-April in that area.
Okay.
So not for several more weeks. Please promote it any way you can.
Yeah, 6,000 to go.
We got a long way to go. Yeah. I'm not going to do one as my neighborhood. I'm going to do the trail system in lieu of it. But taking your experience of what you know about our system for Clark County and how it fits you and your lifestyle.
And Greg Foster was going to present today. Perhaps he'll present and you can get a better idea of how
Okay.
Pulls out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
anyway, that's what I'm hoping. John?
Well, you know, you guys were talking about partnerships, and I know of a place in Skamania County that's looking for parks where perhaps people can smoke some weed.
Boy, you know, it's never
been. It's never been. Yeah, I need to point out, wash them off, forget it back.
Boy, that was the last thing I expected anyway.
Yeah.
That's a new revenue stream.
That was good enough. Got my attention. Thank you.
I do have one item, and if you weren't at the State of the County yesterday, the Employee of the Year for Clark County, as selected by the Neighborhood Association Council of Clark County, is our own Parks Manager, Bill Bjerke.
How did you keep that from us? I didn't know that until just
quite
a second.
I wasn't sure. I knew that I might have been nominated, but that was probably the extent.
Wow.
So I dressed up just in case. I'm sure.
Congratulations.
I do want to point out that he thanked this board in his gracious comments. He thanked the Board of County Councilors. He thanked the current Public Works Director, Heath Henderson, the former Public Works Director, Pete Capel, but strangely, he did not thank any of his support staff, and I'm sure that was an oversight on your part, correct?
Oh, man!
Wait.
You're going to go back and
send
an email, Bill.
Boy, roses are due.
Senior management.
Is your meeting tonight at midnight?
I'll bring the torches. Anyway,
wow.
Very well deserved. I applaud that.
Sure.
I was overjoyed when I heard that he was selected for this honor.
Well, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, thanks for telling us.
So, Leanne, do you have anything? Wisdom?
Nope.
Words of wisdom? Well, then let's. Note the time and adjourn. How about the time is 3:17?
Turn the thing off.
Well, Kelly, I just wanted to thank you for staying.